ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. For the Jew first, and also for the Gentile. Those great words of Rabbi Paul, better known as the Apostle Paul, Romans chapter 1, verse 16. That's how you know that you've tuned in to Jesus Made Me Kosher. And boy, we're glad that you did. Rabbi Glenn here with you today, coming to you live from the spacious and congenial studios of Faith Talk 1500. And I should tell you that Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael. You can find us on the web at Shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. And, you know, I'm really delighted today to have as a guest on our show a friend of mine and of Rabbi Lauren's, Motel Ballaston. Motel is a Jewish believer in Yeshua, Jesus. He was born in a Jewish home in Brooklyn, New York. We'll let him tell the story of how he came to know Yeshua, Jesus, as the Messiah. But Motel has led in a number of ways within the Messianic movement. We really thank God for him. He's the director of Messengers of the New Covenant in New Jersey, and this is a ministry that's been going on for many years now. And he continues to lead this ministry. He's also the associate rabbi at Congregation Beth Messiah in New Jersey. He's a founding board member also, and we're hoping to talk about this a little bit as well today, founding board member of the Association of Messianic Congregations, which was started in 2003 with the purpose of encouraging and strengthening Messianic congregations to be, you know, Messiah-centered, theologically sound, doctrinally sound, joyfully Jewish, and just a dear brother in the Lord. Motel, welcome to Jesus Made Me Kosher. Do we have you there, Motel?
I'm doing fine here in New Jersey.
All right. Well, it's great to have you on and really appreciate you coming on today. Last I saw you was just a couple of years ago at our dear departed brother Ernie Fasano's funeral, and you did such a lovely job with that. But talk to us. Tell us a little bit about how this nice Jewish boy raised in Brooklyn came to realize that Jesus really is the Messiah of Israel and the Savior. And how did God reveal this to you? How did Jesus make you kosher?
Well, I guess my story is very prototypical of a lot of American Jewish stories. As we say in Brooklyn, I was brung up in Brooklyn, and that's perfectly acceptable grammar in Brooklyn. And I have, you know, four Jewish grandparents. All four of my grandparents were born in Jewish villages in Eastern Europe. My grandparents came to this country all around 1910 or so. All were relatively orthodox, traditional Jewish practice. And they settled in the promised land of Brooklyn. And the neighborhood they were in was Williamsburg, Brooklyn, very heavily Orthodox Jewish area. And my parents were that next generation who were striving to be American. And they had a strong sense of Jewish culture, but at the same time were exploring the world around them. And so I was born into a home in Brooklyn in a very, very traditional Jewish neighborhood where it was made very clear to me that our heritage was very important, it was very valuable, it was very dear to us. I didn't realize at the time how just completely Jewish my upbringing was until I started to compare notes with other Jewish believers in Yeshua who are coming from various backgrounds. But I grew up in a neighborhood in Brooklyn that was a housing project that went up in the mid-50s, and within a few years after going up, it turns out it was about 90% Jewish was my neighborhood. And so, up until about age 11 or 12, I thought we were the majority in the world. I thought that the world was Jewish. I don't know if that was your experience, Glenn.
It was.
But
it was. That, Although my experience, you know, you mentioned your experience being different from many others. Yeah, I grew up in a Jewish home in Los Angeles. And I mean, mm-hmm. the difference between growing up in a very liberal Jewish home in Los Angeles and growing up in a Jewish home in Brooklyn, New York, very, very different experience. But talk to us about, you had your bar mitzvah, right? Went to Hebrew school, had your bar mitzvah. But at some point, you must have begun asking some questions.
Well, I was asking questions, and that was the time to ask questions. The 70s were a time period where a lot of Jewish baby boomers were asking those sorts of spiritual questions, and unfortunately, a lot of the cults were the ones giving the answers. So I watched Jewish friends of mine, guys I grew up with and went to shul with, fall into all different types of isms. And as I checked each one out, I recognized that there were problems with each one of them, and they would all say, and here's a very typical thing that would really help inform your listeners. I would go to some guru meeting that one of my Jewish friends had pulled me to, and they'd tell me that here's what you have to do to know the truth. All you have to do is dress in white, face India when you pray, become a vegetarian, and shave your head. And if you do all of those outward cultural things, you will know the secret of the universe. Now, on the other hand, I had a lot of other Jewish friends who became very orthodox. We lived right next door to the Lubavitch area, the Crown Heights area of Brooklyn, where there are many Orthodox. And I went to their meetings as well, and they had a different formula for truth. They said, all you have to do is dress all in black. Face Israel when you pray. Face Jerusalem. Eat only kosher foods and wear this big black hat. And if you do all those outward cultural things, you'll know the truth of the universe.
And oh, by the way, our rabbi is the Messiah.
Yes. The short of it is that each of these groups had an outward cultural formula for how you would know the truth. But it all of a sudden dawned on me that, does that mean that God can only be known if we dress a certain way or eat a certain type of food? And I realized that that's nonsense. So I had just about despaired of finding God when I realized and admitted to myself that the one thing I had dared not check out were the claims of Jesus. Because in my neighborhood, I didn't know any nice Jewish boys who believed in Jesus. I had friends who were Italian and Catholic, and they believed in Jesus. And so I said to myself, well, I'm not Italian, so I guess I'm not allowed to believe in him. When someone said, no, but he was Jewish. And I said, well, he may have been, but then he converted. They said, no, he never converted. He was a Jew. So that set me on my search, and I simply had to find a New Testament. So I went to the Brooklyn Public Library, and there on the stacks at Dewey Decimal 220 would be Bibles. And my grandfather had long ago, when I was a young child, had warned me against ever touching a Christian Bible. He had said that my fingers would burn in the place where I touched it. That was an old, Eastern European Jewish tradition. And so with kind of trembling hands, I opened to the very first page of this forbidden New Testament. And the first sentence I read in the New Testament was, this is the generations, this is the story of the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. So as I'm reading the New Testament, so far everyone mentioned is Jewish. And so much for it being a forbidden anti-Semitic book, it's a Jewish book. And as I read further, I began to see that it is the story of a Jewish rabbi by the name of Yeshua, who shows up in Israel 2,000 years ago and claims to be the Mashiach, the Messiah. And so I had to find out if that was true. And so I searched high and low for some Jewish believers who could speak to me about this. Didn't find Jewish believers at that moment, but found a man who was able to sit down with me, who knew Hebrew, who had lived in Israel, and was able to take me through the scriptures. And that really was the start of how the Lord reached me.
Well, how old were you at that point?
I was 21, 22.
Okay.
And the man who I sat down with happened to have been an individual who spent time on the original Masada excavations in Israel in the early 60s. He had lived on the kibbutz, spoke Hebrew, and he took me through the scriptures, through my own Jewish Bible, and I was chagrined to all of a sudden realize that he knew my Jewish Bible better than I did. And he took me through various passages, and ultimately and finally, he turned to a chapter in the Jewish Bible. There's a book by the name of Daniel, one of the Jewish prophets. And in Daniel chapter 9, there's an amazing, simple chronology. And setting aside the math for the moment, the chronology is amazingly simple. It basically says, and it uses the word Messiah, it says that the Messiah will appear and come and be in Israel, then the Messiah is going to be killed. It doesn't simply say he's going to die. This man was able to show me in the Hebrew text where it literally says others would kill him. He would be killed. And then the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, the temple that stood for so many years, the temple would be destroyed. So very simply, the Messiah appears, then the Messiah is killed, and then the temple in Jerusalem is destroyed. So he looked at me and he said, well, when was the temple destroyed? And I was kind of foggy on that at that time. So like over 1,000 years ago, right? And he said, actually, the temple was destroyed in the year 70 AD, 70 of our common era. So that means that the Jewish Bible is saying the Messiah had to have come before the year 70 AD.
Wow. That certainly limits the parameters, doesn't it?
It narrowed it right down. And wow. So his question to me was, what Jewish man who had appeared on the scene before the year 70 of the Common Era, who was born where the Jewish prophet said the Messiah would be born, which is Bethlehem, the town of Bethlehem, the prophets say that, and born in the miraculous way that the prophets had foretold, what Jewish man was there? And so it very quickly narrowed down to the Jewish man Jesus or Yeshua.
Well, you know, model, it's so paradoxical that here it's so abundantly clear from our own Jewish scriptures that the Messiah is going to be born in a particular place at a particular time, and you have but one candidate who meets the criteria. And yet our people, even our leaders, the rabbis, obviously have a vested interest in preventing Jewish people from believing this. Yet there it is in our scriptures. And here's the paradox. We're known as the people of the book. We don't even know that book.
So often, and sadly, so often, that's true. I wish it weren't true. I wish I could say something else. I am, you know, a Zionist. I'm an ardent booster of my own people, but this is the same sort of failing that the Jewish prophets themselves noted so many times. I mean, the Jewish prophet Isaiah said, the people don't know me, even the leaders, they teach things that are not true. And so often, in each new generation of Jewish leaders, there seems to be a different truth. Yeah. And for me, it became apparent that the truth has to be in the scripture, in the Torah, in the words that God gave. And so when faced with the very clear evidence from all of the Bible, and especially there in Daniel, it became very clear that Jesus, that Yeshua, as he was known at that time, that he is the Messiah.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher, and we are talking today with Model Ballaston, who's the associate rabbi at Beth Messiah in New Jersey, also the director of Messengers of the New Covenant, an outreach showing Jewish people that Yeshua, Jesus, really is the Messiah, helping Christians to understand the Jewish roots of their faith. I should also mention that Model is a graduate of Northeastern Bible College, as am I, and Model has also done extensive graduate studies, Biblical Theological Seminary in Pennsylvania, the Ulpan Beit Ha'am in Jerusalem, and we really appreciate him. Model, I want to segue into something. Talk to us a little bit about, briefly, because I do want to talk about the AMC. I think it's so important that people understand this. But tell us a little bit about how God then moved you into ministry, both through messengers and also for a couple of years serving as the rabbi at Beth Messiah.
Sure. Well, after praying to receive Messiah, I was at that point still working in the dental industry. I was making crowns and bridges. That's what I was doing. And after about 2 or 3 years of getting involved in going to Bible studies, my wife and I, and my wife, by the way, is also a Jewish believer. I met her after I became a believer. The same man who led me to the Lord had led her to the Lord. She's from a Sephardic Jewish background. And so we looked at each other and we said, what are we doing, you know, working secularly? And we very quickly transitioned into full-time ministry. I was going to evening Bible school at the time. And so it became something that was very important to spend more and more time getting the message about Jesus as Messiah out to our own Jewish people. So very quickly we got involved in full-time ministry here in New Jersey. There are over 250,000 Jewish people within a 20 or 30 mile radius, and just that's just in North Jersey, which is, you know, of course, largely a bedroom community for New York City. And so for years we were and still are involved in a ministry called Messengers of the New Covenant, which goes back to the early 1940s as it sought to help refugees coming out of Europe. And so over these years, the Lord has involved me in a number of things. Beth Messiah Congregation is one where I've served both as interim rabbi and now as associate messianic rabbi, and it has just been a very wonderful and productive ministry over these years. We've seen a number of our own Jewish people come to recognize and accept Yeshua, Jesus, as their Messiah. So that's been really just a very great encouragement to us.
That is really wonderful. You know, back in the day, when you and I first became believers, it seemed that Jewish believers were few and far between. And if you met another Jewish person who believed in Yeshua, you thought, oh, my goodness, I'm not the only one. Now you can't even keep up anymore. Hey, do you know so-and-so? No. Well, he is a Jewish person. He believes in Jesus. That's great. God is obviously doing a great work, and it's, I think, the beginnings of something even much greater. Can't even keep up anymore. Well, kind of in line with that idea that there are growing numbers of Jewish believers, it also means that there are growing numbers of Messianic congregations, including larger umbrella organizations, that unions of congregations, and there have been some theological problems with some of them. There has been a certain amount of theological drift, a move away from Yeshua being at the center of everything, and almost it's almost as though Yeshua has become a footnote for some of these folks, and there has become a need for better theology, sound doctrine among the congregations. And so out of that, the AMC, the Association of Messianic Congregations, was born. Talk to us a little bit about that. That's been going almost 10 years now.
Well, about almost 10 years, we recognized that there was a need for a kind of a voluntary association of Messianic congregations who valued being Messiah-centered. One of the things we recognize is no matter how Jewish we are culturally, that is not going to move or impress people in the Jewish community to somehow believe that they have to accept Yeshua. We'll never be Jewish enough for them as long as we believe in the Messiah. So to us, that was not the answer, because they'll just keep backing you away from Jesus until you've denied him. And we've seen that, sadly, happen with a number of people. And so there were a number of leaders of Messianic congregations about 8 years, 8, 9 years ago, who recognized the need to assemble together and to be an encouragement to one another. And so there was a congregation leader in Tucson, Arizona, who called for a gathering of believers. I was able to host that gathering in New Jersey. And out of that came the Association of Messianic Congregations. And on the web, it's simply www.messianicassociation.org. And we now have a voluntary association of Messianic congregations that value sound doctrine. To us, sound doctrine is central. It's not something that is on the side, maybe, you know, this sort of thing, but really it is central. And being a testimony to our own Jewish people is also something that's very important. So at this point, we have 12 congregations, and in the whole body of Messianic congregations, which is over 200, that's not a whole lot, but we were never under the delusion that we would ever be the biggest organization.
Sure.
That is, you know, doing things very carefully and very scripturally is not always the thing that's most attractive to the largest number of people.
Yeah.
But we believe that the Lord has really called us to this.
Absolutely. I think success shouldn't be defined by our numbers, but rather by faithfulness. Well, Model, we just have a couple of minutes, but
sure.
one of the things that's been very troubling to Rabbi Lauren and to me is this whole idea of converting, and I would put quotes around that for our listening audience, converting Gentiles into Messianic Jews. Talk to us briefly about this problem, why it's not biblical, and
sure.
and what we should how we should address it.
Well, in our congregation, you will find that 60% of the folks who attend are Jewish and 40% are from non-Jewish backgrounds. Here's what we say. God has no stepchildren. There's no second tier at the table. There's no second group of seats that is further from the table. Everyone has a place at the table. God does not value Jews over Gentiles. And I think the origin of the desire to somehow convert and be Jewish is the mistaken impression by some believers in Jesus from non-Jewish backgrounds that somehow God values them less. And biblically, nothing is further from the truth. God has no stepchildren. He values each one equally. And in the New Testament, it's very clear. As you read in the book of Romans, as you read in Galatians 6, there are both Jewish believers and there are Gentile believers. Both need to stand up very clearly and say God is calling people from every tribe, every tongue, every nation. That doesn't, and the question of whether Gentiles have to convert was answered very simply in the book of Acts, and it was judged that no, they come just as they are through the merits of Jesus as the Messiah. And so we need to recognize, especially as Jewish believers, that God accepts each and every one just as they are, and there's no need for people to start making up fake Jewish relatives long ago in the past, as we sometimes see, because God really does value them as they are and calls each one to come into his family as believers from a whole host of different backgrounds.
Well, we certainly feel the same way you do about that, and we want to be in line with what the New Testament is teaching. This has been an interview with Model Ballaston, and if you'd like to read Model's story for yourself, you can go online to MessiahNJ for New Jersey, MessiahNJ.org, and you'll find there Model's testimony under the at the website of Messengers of the New Covenant. Model, we certainly appreciate your own contribution, both through Messengers and at Beth Messiah, in teaching the children and running the education there, and just what you've been to the larger body of Messiah. We certainly appreciate that and appreciate you taking the time today to tell us how Messiah made himself very real in your life.
Well, thanks so much, Rabbi Glenn, and appreciate the work that you're doing there in Congregation Shema Yisrael and the important activity in reaching all people in the Michigan area with the message of Jesus, the Jewish Messiah.
Thanks so much, Model. Lord's blessings on you. Well, folks, you've been listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher, Rabbi Glenn in today. Again, it's Messengers of the New Covenant. You can find them on the web at MessiahNJ for New Jersey, MessiahNJ.org, and you can read Model's story. And folks, thank you for tuning in to Jesus Made Me Kosher today. We would like to, again, direct you to our website if you'd like to learn more about Congregation Shema Yisrael, read some of our articles. You can even sign up for our free newsletter. It's shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. And we're really glad for those of you who've been listening in. Send us an email at shema777@AOL.com, and we'd certainly love to answer any questions we can. So on behalf of Rabbi Lauren and me, Rabbi Glenn, and everybody at Congregation Shema Yisrael, wishing you a great afternoon. Shalom, shalom.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.